after nearly 32 years, new developments in the Lockerbie bombing, which killed 190 Americans.
The new charges mean that there's going to be new scrutiny on what has been one of the most sprawling and protracted terrorism investigations.
We have more on the man who is alleged to have built the bomb that took down the plane. Plus, it's not just Tesla that's on a tear. China's electric vehicle makers are also surging. And why luxury purchases are booming this year. It's Thursday, December 17th. I'm Keith Collins, filling in for Mark Stewart for The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. French President Emmanuel Macron has tested positive for COVID-19, his office said, and will isolate for 7 days while continuing to work. We're reporting the chairman of an FDA advisory panel said the committee is likely to recommend that the agency grant emergency use authorization to Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine when it meets today. The FDA is expected to act Friday, a week after authorizing the shot developed by Pfizer and BioNTech. President-elect Joe Biden's transition team said he intends to get a COVID-19 vaccine in public next week, while the White House said Vice President Mike Pence will get the shot on Friday. A reusable rocket developed by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos' space transportation company Blue Origin has been named by NASA as a potential launch provider for scientific missions later this decade. It makes the company eligible for such NASA business for the first time and allows Blue Origin to use the New Glenn rocket to compete for awards. NASA said no specific contracts had been awarded to the company. In a statement, Blue Origin said it was proud to be in NASA's launch services catalog and looked forward to providing reliable launches for years to come. Other rockets already cleared to compete for NASA's scientific launches include ones from Elon Musk's SpaceX and a Boeing-Lockheed Martin joint venture. Roku has reached a deal to carry the HBO Max streaming service after an 8-month standoff over the financial terms for Roku to carry the app. Roku is the leading streaming app distributor in the U.S., with 46 million active accounts and a large share of the market for set-top devices and software that powers smart TVs. The Journal's Patience Hagen explains what the deal means for the companies.
HBO Max really raised the stakes just in the past few weeks. They announced that they would release Wonder Woman 1984 on Christmas Day on the HBO Max streaming service, simultaneous with its release in theaters. Then they announced they would do the same for all of their films coming out next year. That's an unprecedented move in the way major studios release movies, and it really put a lot more pressure on Roku to get a deal done.
WarnerMedia didn't share any content for the Roku channel in the deal, according to a person familiar with the talks. Facebook is opening up another front in its longtime feud with Apple over its business practices. The social media giant says it will help the company behind the popular video game Fortnite in its legal battle with the iPhone maker. In its suit, Epic Games has claimed Apple's App Store operates like a monopoly. Apple has rejected the accusations and said it provides app developers with great business opportunities. Facebook says it isn't joining the lawsuit filed by Epic, but will provide the company with supporting materials and documents. And Major League Baseball has said it is correcting a long-time oversight in the game's history by elevating the Negro Leagues from 1920 through 1948 to Major League status. It's a move that recognizes baseball's long-excluded black pioneers and immediately rewrites the sport's record books. MLB said it has begun a review process with its official statistician to determine the full scope of this designation's ramifications and will work with historians to evaluate relevant issues. Chinese electric vehicle makers have seen their valuations soar this year, reaching levels similar to those of U.S. auto giants GM and Ford. This despite the fact that these Chinese upstarts, including NIO and the Warren Buffett-backed BYD, are unprofitable. Journal Markets editor Quentin Webb joins me from Hong Kong. Good morning, Quentin.
Good morning, Keith.
Why have these companies experienced such a big boost in valuation this year?
Well, I think there's a few things going on. One is what you might call the Tesla effect. So, you know, that company has run up in value a huge amount and is now by far the world's most valuable car company. And investors, I think, are looking for similar stocks. They've found a few in China, which could be a sort of Chinese equivalent, if you like. On top of that, there's a more fundamental argument for these companies, which is that China is keen to move to a greener energy in future. It has set these ambitious carbon emissions targets for the next few decades. And electric cars play an important part in that. And on top of that, you know, the market's becoming more mature as well. So these cars are becoming more competitive in price with traditional vehicles. There are signs that Chinese consumers are more ready to buy electric cars. So put these things together, and basically you have the ingredients for a pretty impressive rally.
And how are they justifying those elevated valuations?
Right. Well, so the valuations are indeed elevated. And, you know, for these stocks to kind of deserve those valuations, if you like, these companies have to keep growing very fast. At the moment, they're only really delivering very small numbers of cars. So, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of cars a month, where big car companies are talking in the millions of units per year. So they need to keep growing quickly. And at the same time, they need to kind of fend off this challenge from the existing car makers. And Tesla itself is very popular in China. And on top of that, you know, there's basically no traditional car maker that's not interested in getting into the electric industry as well. So in order for these valuations to work out in the long term, these companies have got to keep growing fast and they've got to keep competitive.
Quentin Webb in Hong Kong, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Keith.
Just ahead, possible charges against a suspect who is alleged to have built the bomb that downed Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie almost 32 years ago. We'll bring you the details after the break. The bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland in 1988 killed 270 people, including 190 Americans. Now, the Justice Department is expected to bring charges against a suspect who they allege assembled the bomb that took down the plane. Officials say they'll seek the extradition of Abu Aguila Mohammed Massoud to the U.S. from Libya, where he's currently held. It opens a new chapter in one of the world's longest and most sprawling terrorism investigations. For the details, our Charlie Turner spoke with Justice Department reporter Sadie Gurman.
So, Sadie, the Lockerbie bombing happened 32 years ago this coming Monday. I imagine a lot of people hadn't realized the case isn't completely settled. Can you get us caught up on what's happened between then and now, and what U.S. officials say about what led to the new charges?
That's right. Only one man has been convicted in the case, and he was convicted by Scottish judges for his role in the attack. And he was convicted in Scotland, and was since released about 8 years later on compassionate grounds and died in 2012. Leaving the victims feeling like they didn't have much closure, and there are still a lot of unanswered questions about the case, even now. Since then, though, the man who is expected to be charged next week gave a confession to Libyan authorities in 2012, and a few years later, in 2017, that information was basically revealed to, you know, the United States, and they began re-examining the case. So that kind of brings us up to where we are today.
What do we know about how these new charges and the extradition request came together?
After learning about the confession from Scottish authorities, United States investigators and the FBI sought to interview him or his interrogator. And basically, FBI agents this past spring went to Tunisia to actually talk to the Libyan intelligence officer. And then weeks later, the Justice Department's National Security Division and the U.S. Attorney in Washington, which is bringing this case, showed the evidence that they had to the Attorney General, who gave his approval to pursue the case.
So what are the implications of these charges and the extradition request, first of all, for the case?
Well, the new charges mean that there's going to be new scrutiny on what has been one of the most sprawling and protracted terrorism investigations, and basically will open up a new window into what has been a very long and arduous investigation involving multiple different countries. So what remains to be seen is whether the Libyan government will comply with the United States' request to extradite this suspect, which will be a key element in determining whether he actually is held accountable.
What about for the suspect?
Mr. Massoud has already been imprisoned in Tripoli for some time now, and the new charges that he could face include destruction of an aircraft resulting in death and destruction of a vehicle in interstate commerce resulting in death. Those are two pretty serious federal charges and speak to the role that U.S. officials say he played in this attack.
And tell us about the impact of these charges for the victims' families.
So what we're hearing so far is that many of these victims' families are surprised, and they're obviously very interested to know more about this case. A lot of these people have just felt like they don't have closure, and this, you know, was a sign that the United States had never really let this go. And so I think that they're pleased about that, but they're cautiously optimistic given all of the twists and turns that have happened in this over the past 32 years.
At the time of the bombing, when Libya was led by the late dictator Muammar Gaddafi, It led the U.S. to brand Libya as a state sponsor of terrorism. What are the implications of these latest developments for international relations, especially between the U.S. and Libya?
I think that remains to be seen, too. Some Libyans still believe that their country was falsely accused, but many are now regarding actions taken by the former regime as the work of a discredited government. The United Nations had formally put sanctions on Libya over the Lockerbie bombing, but it remains to be seen how the current government will respond to this news. A senior advisor to Libya's U.S.-recognized government said that authorities there had already questioned Mossad. And so it remains to be seen, whether what the long-term impact of these charges are for the U.S. relations with that country.
So, Sadie, what happens next? What should we expect?
What happens next will depend on whether the Libyan government complies with the United States' request to bring him to trial here. But if that happens, I think we could see a potentially protracted and very detailed and drawn out trial with a lot of new information about, sort of the details of the case coming to light, and also a lot of victim impact statements as other terrorism investigations have gone. But this could make for some potentially very interesting revelations about this old, old case.
Wall Street Journal Justice Department reporter Sadie Gurman. Thanks a lot, Sadie.
Thank you.
And finally, during the pandemic, spending on travel, experiences, and dining has fallen while people have been stuck at home. Some are taking the opportunity to trade up, treating themselves to purchases ranging from premium spaghetti sauce or salon-worthy shampoo to designer handbags and diamond jewelry. The splurging defies the norms of past economic downturns when consumers traded down to less expensive items. Wall Street Journal retail reporter Suzanne Kapner looked into the phenomenon.
Aspirational customers. These are people who love and crave luxury items, but they can't afford them on a regular basis. So now when they feel like they have a little more money in their pocket, they might treat themselves to the designer handbag, the expensive watch, the diamond jewelry.
You can hear more of Suzanne's reporting on today's Your Money Briefing podcast. And that's What's News for Thursday. We're back tonight with a new show. You can stay up to date with all our latest stories on WSJ.com and the Journal app. I'm Keith Collins with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.